The One Health approach informs the way we address complex problems affecting all organisms on the planet. In this episode, we'll talk about lessons learned from One Health Connect 2021, a virtual event co-organized by the Public Health Insight, which aimed to highlight the importance of transdisciplinary approaches to address present and future challenges that threaten human, animal, and environmental health.
This is the Public Health Insight Podcast.
Hello, everyone. My name is Purva, and I have the pleasure of being your host for this episode, along with your favorite co-hosts, Gordon and LaShawn.
Before we move on, it is important to note that the views expressed in this podcast are our own and do not represent any of the organizations we work for or are affiliated with.
So the One Health Connect was an educational experience with the aim to educate and spread awareness of One Health and its domains and just increase the importance of the field to the attendees. To start us off, why don't you both tell me about the first time that you guys heard about One Health and its global impact? Gordon, why don't you go first?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. The first time, I had a lot of firsts in when I was doing my Master of Public Health in 2018 to 2019. And we had a class where Dr. Olea Popelka, who focuses a lot on tuberculosis and as a zoonotic infection, and he kind of brought up the concept of One Health. And that was the first time I was aware about the sort of the animal and environmental health side of it, rather than just the public health side where we're primarily more concerned about how diseases affect humans. So that was the first time I heard about it.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Gordon since we were both in the same MPH program at Western University. So yes, Dr. Popelka did introduce that concept of One Health to me. And what was interesting is I was very, you know, in awe because you're learning about these broad themes in human health, animal health, and environmental health. And you're wondering, how can such seemingly separate things be so important? And those interconnections and learning about how one's interdependence on the others can cause so much for human health outcomes, animal health outcomes, and environmental health outcomes. So taking that perspective and utilizing that in public health frameworks and global health frameworks, I think is going to be important, especially when we talk about these global solutions that we are always looking at.
Doesn't Western have a One Health program now too?
Yeah, it does.
Yes, they do.
I think started the year after I took the One Health course, which was, I believe, a semester before maybe you guys. I think
There's a One Health course?
There was, I think there still is. It's a One Health course, Intro to One Health for undergrads. So that's where I first about One Health heard about One Health. For me, it was kind of the idea of why this hadn't been taught to us beforehand, because it just made sense to be thinking about all three of these domains interconnectedly. And there's so many topics that just made sense to me. So I thought it was a great course to kind of get intro to the topic overall.
Okay. I mean, starting early, right? We learned in our master's, you're learning in undergrad. And then we know there's organizations out there doing education from like the level of high school. So, I mean, the earlier you learn, the more you're able to act on it. So that's great.
Of course. What was kind of one of the driving reasons for why PHI wanted to start OHC 2021? And perhaps who the guests, you know, invited? Why did we pick them?
Yeah, I would say that Public Health Insight is always looking for different ways to spread awareness of different topics. And one of the topics we all agreed on as a team, alongside Health Innovation Initiative, which was one of our core organizers, was this idea of One Health. And what we noticed is that we felt it was such an important theme, especially given the pandemic setting, to talk about using One Health as kind of that framework and thinking about disease transmission, disease surveillance, collaborating with different stakeholders. All these important things are central to that One Health perspective. So we wanted to highlight that on the global stage. And so we really want to create this event to not only introduce local audiences in Canada about the One Health approach. And like Purva and Gordon, you mentioned, a lot of people, even in Canada, don't even know. And public health and global health students, their first time hearing about this concept may only be when they do their master's. Because even though I didn't do a public health undergraduate degree, I never even heard of this. But I feel like it's so important. So we overall thought it was a great and important concept to highlight that didn't have a lot of light shed on it. And so we kind of held this event and we made it an international event. And we could talk more into details about who came, and yeah. I'll pass it over to Gordon because I know he was involved with more of the guest recruitment side of things.
Yeah, but even further to why we did it, one of our priorities is to create a forum for collaboration and networking. And one of the challenges with networking in the past is you end up networking with people in your own field. So if you're in public health or in policy, you'd have a seminar that brings all the people in policy together, and the policy people talk about policy. Now, what we wanted to do is to break those boundaries a bit, and that hence our slogan, Transcending Boundaries. So one of the things we wanted to do is to bring people from different disciplines, from animal health, One Health, One Health in general, public health, and environmental health, and any other sub-disciplines related to that, so that we can have a conversation around how best to approach a problem, applying all these different lenses. So that was why we thought One Health would be a great way to inspire that dialogue. And yeah, we had the pleasure of recruiting some well-known guests from One Health to the event. Dr. Sharon Deem, who we recruited as the representative from Animal Health. We had Dr. Kamini Walia, who talked about the more public health side, focusing on antimicrobial resistance. And we had Doreen Robinson from the United Nations Environmental Program, bringing that conservation, ecology, and environmental health lens to the conversation. So, and we had, Dr. Deb Thompson, who was the MC for the event, who comes into the conversation with a lot of subject matter expertise herself. So that was something where we felt it was important to bring it all together. And, we'll talk about the panel discussion later, which was a very good space to bring different ideas from different disciplines. But yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Amazing. I know all of these speakers must have been, I was kind of involved in it too, so I know that the speakers were...
Yeah, let's talk about... Don't just glance over that. Why are you hosting this podcast? People are listening. Who's this pervert person? What's going on? Why are we having this conversation?
I'm the project coordinator at PHI. I was really closely involved with the OHC event and working with the rest of the PHI team and Hi Squared, our health innovation initiative, to pick the guests, content create for the panels, and... overall, a lot of decisions and stuff. It was really fun. I loved it. It was so great working on it, especially knowing, as you guys said, that the overall topic of One Health was such an important. I think it was such a good, perfect timing too with the pandemic, and there were eyes on the topic already globally.
And your background's in global health too, so I can imagine it's in line with what you've done.
Yeah, and I went into global health with, because I took the One Health course, and then I took another course on infectious diseases. The course itself, One Health, was a very driving factor for why I got into global health in the first place as well. So it was really exciting to be able to work on something that, fueled a passion of mine to pursue the master's in the first place. It's very exciting. I enjoyed it a lot. And success was great too. So it was good payoff. but I know there were a lot of topics we could have narrowed down on. The brainstorming that we did was kind of endless. What are some topics in One Health that we kind of focused in on that we thought were a priority to discuss with stakeholders and, the general public, even ones that maybe didn't make it into the final discussions or the panels for the event itself too? Sean, do you want to go ahead and talk about some topics?
Yeah, sure. So like Gordon mentioned, we had these speakers come in to talk about their subject matter expertise in the given domain of One Health. So we had environmental health, animal health, and human health. And so within that, you could kind of connect all these different potential topics within One Health, like antimicrobial resistance, infectious diseases, and climate change. And I think for the most part, that was a big chunk of the focus of what we did. And we talked about overall themes about how these all connect and the skills and competencies needed in order to tackle these issues.
Yeah, and I would just add to, so looking at it even more at a higher level, so when you're talking about One Health, you have the One Health concept and you have the One Health approach. So the One Health concept is more of the relationship between, organisms in the ecosystem. So a human, animal, environment, plants, you name it. So, but the One Health approach is sort of the framework through which we approach addressing those threats to animal, human, and environmental health. And what I mean by that is the approach is focusing on the collaboration, the partnerships, teamwork, the network. So we also wanted to make sure we had some topics centered around action. So how do we, working together, that's nice to say, and it's pretty common as a solution for everything, but how do we actually do that in this complicated discipline? So that was a lot of our discussion centered around how do we best collaborate to solve a lot of these One Health issues.
Yeah, and I know Dr. Sharon Deem also went into, she kind of, in her keynote speech, she listed out a couple shared threats, so to say, and you know, things like emergence of infectious diseases, antimicrobial resistance, AMR, globalization, food security, and all these things. And then there was also further discussion on how they work so closely with one another. And there's a lot of emphasis being put on it now that you've got the pandemic that really did touch on all of these various topics in global, you know, spaces. You know, there's this almost global urgency with the agenda for One Health in the last year or so, with it being, you know, pointed out by the World Health Organization and the various organizations around the world. And the keynote speakers all touched on that. But, you know, I think OHC really provided a platform where the attendees and even us, we could make those connections because we have these great speakers and experts there. What specific way did those connections expand your understanding, or maybe we thought the attendees from their feedback, you know, was there a way that they said that OHC helped with that overall agenda and what they might do with that going forward?
Even just from my own learning, a lot of our effort was put into organizing the event, making sure things run smoothly. And perhaps, you know, we didn't, as organizers, we didn't get to realize the benefits as a learning experience, you know, as a whole from being organizers. But having had the chance to rewatch the recordings, you're able to see and learn, oh, did they say that? And one of the things that came out from me just going on that journey is, you know, Dr. Dean mentioned that humanity has wiped out 68% of the animal population, which is, you know, something that's a little bit disturbing. And then even Doreen Robinson, prior to this event, I think there was a conference that she spoke at where she said, human behavior drives the emergence and transmission of zoonotic diseases. That means human behavior can fix it. That's where we need to start. So you're starting to see it all, even though we primarily focus a lot on how issues affect humans, we also should focus on how human activity affects everything else. And that's something that should not be disconnected from even population health and public health itself.
Yeah, no, I would have to agree with Gordon. I know that me and him were on the back end kind of making sure everything runs smoothly, so kind of hindered the amount we could take away from the event. But like you mentioned, we went back and listened to the recordings and we're like, wow, they said this, that's amazing. So for me though, I did pick up on things, and from Dr. Walia's presentation specifically, I remember she was talking about antimicrobial resistance. And she's also talking about that idea when we're tackling this issue, we're often talking about it from the human and clinical perspective, from when we're talking about zoonotic infections and antimicrobial resistance. And she mentioned that this is just the tip of the iceberg. We need a more informed response when we're talking about these issues to consider that environmental aspect, to consider that animal aspect. And then she goes on to say, only 30% of antimicrobial use is by humans, and the rest of the 70 is by animals, livestock. So that really shows, if we're only focusing on that 30% usage, we're really leaving a lot on the table there in terms of action and informed decision making. So that, like, those ideas are stuff that I took away from the event. And the second thing is the response, the people who attended the event. These are individuals from all around the world, and they sent us messages saying, hey, Public Health Insight, hey, LaShawn Gordon, hey, organizing committee, this is the first time I've heard of this concept. It's so important. The speakers did such a great job demonstrating different points and different action items. I am motivated more so than ever to pursue a career in One Health. And that's phenomenal. Like, we did not expect that as an outcome of one of our events for someone to be so interested in One Health. But by coming to this event, hearing these discussions and, you know, having these networking opportunities to talk with leaders in the One Health field, you never know what can happen. And that's the form we want to create, and that form for collaboration that Gordon was mentioning. You never know what's going to happen, but we want to have a space, an intentional space, to have these discussions.
Further to LaShawn's point, I'm not sure, I can't remember how many countries were represented, but I know on our word cloud, we have United States, Austria, India, Nepal, Canada, Belgium, Germany, Indonesia, you know, Nigeria, Portugal, Ghana, UK.
Wow, Gordon, what are you talking about? A word cloud? Is there some sort of document
that people can see? Yeah, so we'll be publishing sort of a KT booklet, knowledge translation booklet, to share some of those key learnings that came out of the event. And in that booklet, there's a breakdown of, you know, the attendees, where countries are from, along with, I think, the industries or their self-identified titles. And we were just pleasantly surprised that, or maybe we shouldn't have been surprised that for such a complicated issue that affects literally every corner of the earth, that we had good representation globally. So that's a one good thing that came out.
I know in the actual event chat, it was so cool to see everyone listing off their countries. But when you have this visual in front of you, it really hits home how many, like, of a global reach that we had with the event. But even not just like the global perspective, but even where someone is in their career. We've got students, we've got researchers, we had people who were, you know, really well established in an organization or at a university. So that was really cool to see, because it brought so many perspectives to not just, you know, the questions that we asked during the panel from the audience, but even the breakout rooms that we had later on as well. It's really cool to see. With COVID-19, you know, pandemic, as we were talking, it ties so closely with One Health topics such as emerging infectious diseases, food security, zoonotic diseases. And we really touched on this in the panel. I believe somebody asked a question directed at the speakers regarding food security, and they all had a lot to say about it. And just for the listeners, food security is basically, you know, a state of having reliable access to sufficient quality and affordable, nutritious food. So it doesn't have to be in, you know, the global south or something. We have issues with food security even in the global north. So this idea of food security was something that they talked about quite a bit, which kind of touched in with, you know, zoonotic disease emergence and this and that. Do you kind of remember that conversation, Gordon?
Yeah, and when we were planning the outline, it's not something that explicitly came up. I think when we were doing the outline, climate change was something that was front and center. And in climate change, you have typically in climate change, you talk about the direct impacts on humans and the indirect impacts on humans. And direct impacts on humans would have been, you know, displacement from flooding and stuff like that. And then on the indirect side, you would have food insecurity. And because, you know, if you have a drought in a agricultural farmland and then you're not able to grow crops, and then that impacts access to food. But I was surprised that there was a light bulb that went on in the panel discussion when food security came up, and all of them had something to say. So there was the antimicrobial resistance piece baked into it. Then there was the animal health side baked into it with the overuse in livestock. And one thing I learned is apparently antibiotics was back in the day was heavily used as a growth promoter for livestock. And my understanding now is that there's not a lot of evidence to support the use for that purpose. So that's not sure, you know, what the disconnect is with that nowadays, and why we can't just stop using it, or if it's so ingrained in the agricultural culture that's why it continues to be used. But yeah, that was a great discussion too. And then, you know, obviously from the environment side, you know, just to be, you know, conserving land, making sure land use is appropriate. There was a lot of discussion around food security.
Yeah, it was really cool because, yeah, as you said, we had really touched on that while planning for these topics and panels. And I believe it was somebody in the audience that somehow triggered that topic. I think it was really good discussions going on. And I learned a lot, especially with what you said with that one study.
Right, from UNEP. UNEP had like a paper on...
Oh, okay, it was UNEP. Okay, yeah, so it was probably...
Yeah, but Dr. Walia brought up that UNEP had a paper.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Around it,
very interesting. That was really cool. Yeah, seeing that space with so many of these global people, I know, I think it was Dr. Deem and Doreen have met previously at some event, but, you know, having Dr. Wally in there, these are people that probably may not have interacted so closely in an event unless they were invited to the same thing. So those partnerships and collaborations, they touched on it too, that it was wonderful to be in a space where they could speak to each other on topics that, you know, they would only ever do if it was something directly related to One Health. And they all touched on how it's important to continue these collaborations outside of the One Health agenda as well, you know, to be involved in political agendas and to make sure that these, you know, collaborations of public health, environmental health, animal health are all present at no matter what type of, you know, topic you're talking about in terms of public health. But I know collaborations and partnerships, something we love at PHI a lot too, evident from this event as well. But could you maybe, I don't know, how did this specific event kind of really hit home how important it is to have interdisciplinary collaboration specifically from not just domains within One Health, but like a plethora of different fields, whether that's political, whether that's public health or, you know, environmental based careers, how it's integral to change globally?
Ooh, that's a tough question, Purva. Thank you for that. Again, it ties into the problem of there's so many specializations, everyone's doing a lot of great work, and it's just not being connected. For example, veterinarians have their own mandate, you know, people in public health have their own mandate, and, you know, environmentalists have their own mandate. And then within those, you have different areas of focus. So even... it's not to say that all veterinarians are on the same page for the same cause. So even within that, there's differences in approaches. So we felt that it was important to have a diverse, not only from the different areas of One Health, but diverse experiences. So we had people who were actually veterinarians. So Dr. Deem and Dr. Thompson, and, you know, Dr. Walia was more on the kind of research side and how the impacts of human activity on animals and vice versa through antimicrobial resistance. And then tying it all together, you have Doreen Robinson on the environment side, where how is the ecosystem affected by our activity and how does the ecosystem affect our activity? So it just, there's a lot of complicated interplays going on that we felt we would try to unpack. And, you know, it tells you a lot where for the event, we didn't even spend too much time talking about COVID-19 because it's not because we tried not to, it's just because there's so many other One Health issues that impact COVID-19, even specifically just the emergence of zoonotic diseases, which COVID-19 is one, and more concern around how do we mitigate this in the future, knowing what we know now.
There were a bunch of different learning opportunities for everyone during those networking sessions for myself and others. So from the perspective of some of the attendees, though, they were in rooms with some of our guest speakers. And it's not every day that you get to have a conversation with the world-leading expert in One Health. So I spent a lot of time encouraging people that this is a great opportunity and, you know, you should just essentially talk about what's on your mind. And I think it really got people talking because people were trying to find ways to integrate the projects they're currently working on, whether it's volunteer projects or their work projects, and getting the guests' opinion on some of the things that they're doing. And it led to a lot of contact information being exchanged, which is always a great thing because we don't want the conversation to just end at this event that we held. We wanted to go past that. We wanted to transcend the event. Another thing for me was a discussion around the education of One Health. So, like we mentioned earlier, we got introduced to One Health during our undergrad or graduate studies. Now, Why is that? What's kind of the fundamental reason behind One Health not being or having a course dedicated to it? And so there's a lot of discussion exchanged onto barriers and facilitators of why. And a very interesting discussion popped up when Dr. Sharon Deem brought up the idea that she actually started a One Health course within her university, and she was more than willing to share the resources and collaborate with others to, you know, start up a similar course at their respective universities. So that knowledge exchange component was there. And it's great to see that it's not just all talk, but there's action involved. People are willing to collaborate. People are willing to share resources. There's no competition. We're all in this together. And something that Doreen Robinson said throughout the whole event, healthy people can't thrive on a sick planet. And that just brings together this whole One Health concept. We have to be a team together to tackle these problems.
Yeah, I think she also mentioned another bit about, you know, you can predict the future by making it. It's not, you know, we're at a turning point where we can really make a lasting change, but we can only do that if we put active action into it and really, you know, preach the gospel, as Gordon earlier said, about One Health to people that are willing to listen and are also passionate about the same things. So I know there were a couple breakout rooms that also discussed about, you know, political-based change. How can we make sure that sometimes we can do all the gospel preaching we want and we can teach people and this and that, but that policy change is so important, and getting One Health onto a political agenda is really important. And I don't have much experience yet in terms of, you know, active policy change and stuff, but you guys can also touch on various topics that came up in the breakout rooms that you guys were in about what we can do and action items that we can take, perhaps things that the experts said about how we can make sure that this is something that gets onto the political agenda, that the, you know, international leaders are really listening to us and the various people that are talking about One Health.
One of the things in terms of policy that came up is this idea that we can't do this alone, right? We need this interdisciplinary systems thinking to solve these world problems that we have today, like climate change, you know, emerging pandemics. And the idea got pushed around a lot about, we don't want to be chasing the next pandemic. We want to get ahead of it. So how do we do this from a policy perspective? Well, we have to, first of all, keep in mind that there are a lot of policy legacies, a lot of policies that are in place that kind of limit how much we can do, how much we could collaborate. We need to work together to break down the cultural, institutional, and technical barriers so we can have this space to collaborate. Now, how do we bring together people from such diverse fields, economics, business people, policymakers, healthcare professionals, veterinarians, everyone? How do we bring them together? Well, we got to be able to speak their language. And one of the things that I always tell people is that as a public health professional, we love preaching the gospel of prevention, public health goodies. We love doing that. But we have to make ourselves and keep ourselves open to the idea that we have to also learn bits and pieces from other sectors and from other disciplines so that we can have this common goal to speak with policymakers, to speak with economists, because we need to make it make sense for all of us. And that's where this idea of framing comes in. How do you frame these public health, these One Health issues, these complex global issues, so that everyone can relate to it? Because fundamentally, if we don't care about the health of our planet, we're not going to get onto the same page with all these problems. So there has to be that deep care about wanting better for us all, and not that selfish, individualistic focus. So reframing, I think, is important.
Took the words right out of my mouth, LaShawn. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to partnerships, collaboration, education. So right now, I would probably feel confident in saying that there's not a lot of One Health people currently making policies. And there perhaps aren't enough One Health people in general. And the people who are in position to make decisions around policy, regulations, future action, need to be informed in a way that meets them at their level so that they can enhance their understanding of One Health and why it's important. So then, in addition to bridging gaps between the animal health person and the environmental health person, the human health person, as a group, then they need to bridge a gap between One Health and policymaking. So then there needs to be a shared language going on in the One Health, you know, macro domain. And they need to get on the same page regarding science communication and present information in a way that highlights the importance to those people who are then responsible for making decisions. So let's put it this way. If there was an issue out there that you're, let's say, Purva LaShawn, you're a policymaker, and there was an issue around, you know, a water crisis in Gordon's home, and you're not aware of it, you wouldn't then see the importance of making policy about it. And then if you weren't aware of the impact that would have on me, maybe you that's another barrier for you actually taking action. So raising awareness in a way that speaks people's language, and then raising awareness of the importance. And it's difficult, right? And a lot of times in One Health, public health, whatever you decide to pick out of that, the benefits you realize are way into the future. So a lot of times, you know, those political cycles, they're very short-lived in a lot of different jurisdictions. It's you have elections, you have to show that you made progress within those election cycles. And oftentimes, if you have a climate change mandate, you're probably not going to have a lot of tangible outcomes between your election cycles. So then you have to communicate the importance to those people electing those people to office. So my expectation as someone who's going to elect an official, I'm not expecting the carbon emissions to go to zero after 4 years, right? So just explaining that, communicating in a way that a lot of what we're doing now is, you know, short-term pain, long-term gain, and just so everyone has to be on the same page.
Yeah, one of the things that I often think about too is how do you operationalize something like this at the policy level? Because when we're talking about One Health, it's so broad. How are you supposed to bring those concepts that are so broad and narrow them down and filter them to the policy level? What does that look like? And my hunch is that it's going to be looking different in every context that we're going to be working in. And so that brings a challenge. Is there enough operational research to show how this is done? What's the gold standard of how this looks like from a policy perspective? And I think there has to be more research done in order to fill in the gaps, to show people this is a framework on how we could implement this in the government level, the local level. How do we get the community involved? But despite this, there are ongoing efforts bringing in policy at the country level. Rwanda recently had a strategic plan. They had a six-year plan from, I believe it ended in 2018, but they re-upped it for a second part, which goes from 2019 to 2024. And they're one of a very few countries that are actually taking this very seriously and putting in practical approaches and actionable items by strengthening their health systems, by having this collaboration, by taking public health threats seriously and building capacity at this human, animal, and environmental interface. So we could definitely learn from the lessons that they're currently going through by implementing this plan in practice. And I know India has a bunch of different initiatives, and we have to realize that we have to be supporting these countries and learning from them. We can't just let them do it in silo, because that defeats the purpose. We have to work together to understand this issue. And to further to that point, it are these countries in low and middle income countries that are going to face the majority of these problems, like emerging diseases. So we have to realize that we have to support our friends from across the world.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Really, the idea of One Health is that we all live on one planet. We share all the resources, really. Like Doreen Robinson mentioned that 9 out of 10 people breathe polluted air. Like, that's so many people. And that's air that we all share and water that we all share. We all have, with the globalization and global movements that happen around the world now, my resources are your resources, and they're the same resources as someone else across the world. So LaShawn, what you're saying is that I completely agree. Like, there needs to be a global, you know, movement towards this. And we really need to urge our political leaders to make sure they're bringing people that are One Health advocates or can speak on One Health onto the platform. and carry out these actions past just a four-year term and have long-term gains from these short-term plans for sure.
Yeah. What do you all think? Is there a policy window for a One Health approach currently, or have we missed the opportunity?
That's a tough one. I would say it depends. It's a long-term effort, right? So ambitious bills, and I would like to give a shout out to Dr. Thompson in her book, The Art of Science Communication. She does have a very comprehensive One Health bill in her book that I spoke to her, and it sounds like it's free to use. If there's any advocate out there from any country, you can kind of borrow it and tailor it to whatever your purpose is. But I think it depends on who's in office. So one example from we had a pleasure of talking to Dr. Thompson about her new book, The Art of Science Communication. And one of the things that she mentioned is that depending on who's in office, if it's a more conservative government, terms like climate change scare them. So because of their constituents. So we can say, oh, you should believe in science, but they're ultimately held accountable to people who elect them to office, whether you like it or not. And those people may or may not believe in climate change. So you're walking a very tricky line there. So what she mentioned is that reframing it, like they're fine by just saying human activity has contributed to the planet acting differently. They just don't want you to use the word climate change. So even as an advocate, understanding if you're going to advocate for policy and take advantage of the policy window, understanding who's the government, understanding how they're going to be receptive to the message, and then presenting it to the way that they're best able to understand it instead of driving it down their throat in a way that you think it should be communicated, understanding that it's a very complex situation, people have different ideologies, and it's just about communicating to them at their level to get them to understand the importance of the initiative. So I think we have a lot of work to do still, LaShawn, to do it. I think ultimately, the hard work comes with communicating to people who are participating in the voting process itself, because if the masses are in favor of climate change policies and One Health policies, then elected officials are not going to be worried about losing their seats and whatever offices they hold, and they might be more receptive. So in a way, our efforts are best placed on the general population to try to shift those beliefs.
Long-term plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To add on to Gordon's, I think, back to LaShawn's question about whether there's a window for it right now, even if we don't approach it from the climate change side of One Health, if we look at it from, infectious diseases, with COVID-19, I think it's a really phenomenal window to be pushing discussions on things like this with the whole loss of biodiversity and food security. AMR is a very hot topic right now in One Health that people, I think, will be willing to listen to because of the pandemic. The guests that we had at OHC were also mentioning that within the last 2 years, it's been really, really amazing to see One Health come to the forefront and it be at, discussions with a whole bunch of political leaders and health leaders. So I think the window right now is good. But as Gordon said, it has to be approached in a way where people will listen. It has to be the language that they will be understanding and be willing to understand. So it'll be a long-term thing for sure, but I think the window right now is a really good opportunity for sure.
And keep in mind too, Purva, there have been, so if we talk about even antibiotic resistance specifically, there have been bacteria in the past that have caused pandemics that killed millions of people. So it's not, and if you think about it, drug-resistant bacteria causing a pandemic, I think that's not a great situation. So AMR is a super important topic.
These are great discussion points, and I hope everyone listening is also learning lots. But kind of what are your key takeaways from organizing, attending, being at the back end and, ideating all together, but also post-event, making the KT report, seeing the recordings? What are some key takeaways that you hope people that attended OHC 2021 or are listening to this podcast can focus in on?
Okay, I have a couple. So the first one would be organizing events are hard, but worthwhile. There was a lot of time spent on these events, so I want to thank everyone who was involved because it took very much a group effort to do this. Collaboration is very hard, but is meaningful. and worthwhile. Again, we achieved so much by, you know, partnering with these different organizations, having our wonderful sponsors such as the Gairdner Foundation, you know, help provide us the platform to even make this possible. I also want to say we have the recording of this whole event on our YouTube channel. You could definitely learn more and see the actual event. And then lastly, I would just say everyone plays a role when it comes to public health and One Health to make a change in their communities. You could start locally by, you know, advocating for a specific issue that you're interested in, talking to your political leaders in your community, you know, telling a friend about One Health, and you never know. Your friend could tell another friend, and they could tell other friends, and it has this amplification effect. So I think that you can do stuff at the individual level that has a lot of impact when we're talking about the population level.
Key takeaways. Okay. So, I mean, in a nutshell, there's the importance of interdisciplinary collaboration. One of the priorities when we were planning this event was, how many times have you gone to a seminar, conference where it's just like physicians, pediatricians, veterinarians, but how often do you go to a conference where it's just a mash of different people, and it, on a surface level, it doesn't make too much sense to you, but then it actually makes sense when you start talking, when you think, oh, I thought this was a problem only veterinarians had. You had, okay, wow. So there's a common issue that requires a common solution, right? So that's one of my key takeaways from this. And even looking to see how we can do this for other things. So to go off topic a little bit, we have issues, public health issues, more human-centric issues like, you know, housing, substance use, and that sort of stuff. Should there be a conference where there's stakeholders from the housing industry, pharmacy, and all that coming together to address the whole issue in a systems thinking way? I mean, can this model be adopted to other issues? That's something that I've been thinking about. And just in general, you're not alone. So given that One Health is not a very visible approach yet, or there's still a lot of room for growth, let's put it that way, it's still surprising that we had so many people who were engaged. So it shows that it's not a lack of willingness to do it, it's just the visibility of other people doing it, so that you know you're not alone, so you have the inspiration to keep going, so that you're empowered to work on these issues. LaShawn mentioned that it's a big problem, but you can start locally. So maybe sometimes it's like, yeah, what possible impact could I have on something like carbon emissions? Maybe don't think that big. Think about, you know, your own communities, from like agricultural practices there. Is there something you can do to minimize your carbon footprint, like in the health of animals and the health of the environment? So those are the things I've been musing about after the event.
Amazing. All good points.
Perva, what about you?
I think even post-event, you know, continuing to think about the conversations that were had, the points that were made by the speakers and, you know, the attendees as well. We have our recordings up on our YouTube, so we want that information available for everybody, not just the people that were able to attend live, because making the education and the information accessible will lead to, you know, more players in the field who can help make a change. You know, it'll help pass the message and create this magnifying effect, as LaShawn mentioned. But even if, you know, maybe the YouTube's more accessible, we're going to be having the knowledge translation report that's going to be coming out, the KT report. It's a really nice summarized viewpoint of things that were discussed. So, you know, continue to think about it, you know, seeking out other resources that talk about One Health and how we can continue to make change politically at home, in your own backyard. Those are all things that I think will be really important takeaways, like the action items that we can do on our own to bring the agenda forward.
Totally agree. And we'll have the link to the report in our episode description, so you could just click the link and check out the awesome job that Priva did to create this booklet in a very graphically, aesthetically pleasing way. It looks great.
Non-intimidating.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much. And I hope everyone remembers, you know, continue transcending boundaries globally, professionally, to build a better future for everybody. That's Priva signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for informative conversations, inspiring community action. If you enjoy our content and would like to stay up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. To learn more about our community initiatives and how you can support us, visit our website at thepublichealthinsight.com. Join the PHI community, and let's make public health viral.